What's happening, everybody? Welcome into a brand new Crossed Up. Anthony Sanfilippo's here. I'm Bob Wankel. Phillies riding a three-game winning streak, Anthony, after they swept the Rockies. They did what they were supposed to do, and now they get a three-game series against a White Sox team that is 3-15 and comes to town with baseball's worst run differential at negative 54. Anthony, the White Sox are scoring 2.11 runs per game this season. The Phillies should sweep this team, right?
Well, they should. But, Bob, let's just start it this way. We said last week they got to win 5 out of 6. I thought they would lose one of the three to Colorado. I thought Colorado was the better of the two teams that they're facing, and they won all three. So, good on them. I will be disappointed if they don't sweep the White Sox, but if they come out of it 5 out of 6 for the week, I think you take it. I don't think you're upset about it, you know. So I don't want to go too far one way and too far the other. We got to stick with the 5 out of 6. I think that's acceptable. Just you got to win this series. But do I think they should sweep them? They should. The White Sox are the worst team in baseball.
Well, I look at this White Sox offense, and I just can't get past it. I mean, they're hitting 196 as a team. They have a 571 team OPS. They can't slug. You look at almost any offensive category, and they're almost dead last. And if you look at the team ERA, they're 24th in baseball as well. Now, I will say this. Phillies have a little bit of a test in front of them tonight. I mean, the guy that the White Sox are going to trot out there is coming off a 10-strikeout performance. You know, tough lefty. I could see this being a situation where if you're going to lose one this weekend, it probably comes tonight following a day off on the heels of a three-game winning streak. And then you know that you have Nola, you have Wheeler to close out this series. That's where I kind of look at it. So tonight, if you're going to lose one, it probably happens in this first game.
Yep.
Although the way that the Phillies have played behind Zach Wheeler so far through 4 starts, I guess you can't guarantee anything at this point.
No, but you know what, though? I mean, look, the starting pitching's been sensational. We talked so about good. We've so talked good. About this. And you're right. I don't want to call it a weak link because it's not a weak link, but the best chance for a starting pitcher to not give you the great outings that they've been giving you is tonight, because Turnbull is not likely to go long. He's probably only going to give you 4 innings, roughly thereabout. And then you got to lean on the bullpen. And so if there's a game that you would be susceptible to be this, you talked about how weak the White Sox are. I don't see how they touch Wheeler, Nola Saturday, Sunday. I really don't. Yeah. Like, those guys would have to be so far off their game to get roughed up by this White Sox lineup. So I look at it and say, you're right. Tonight is the one game where you go, if there's a chance, it would be this one. But I don't see it. I just think that the Phillies are kind of, you know, getting into a little bit of a flow here. Their starting pitching has been so good, and the White Sox stink so badly on offense. I think it's got to be a sweep.
So you think that this emerging Phillies offense will take care of Garrett Crochet tonight?
That's the thing. That's one other thing. I mean, Garrett Crochet, I mean, he's been good, not great for the White Sox, but he leads the league in strikeouts, and the Phillies do strike out a lot. So that's the one thing you got to be careful of tonight is that, you know, you might get some guys on base and then you end up not getting them home because you're striking out against this guy. And then all of a sudden it's a, you know, one run game going into the 6th inning. You're like, why is this a one run game at this point? And it's because there's a lot of swing and miss with Crochet. So that's the one thing I say, you know, that's a red flag to wave, but it's not a, like, you know, we're not waving 1,000 red flags. It's just the one.
Yeah, I mean, there's really not a whole lot to say about it. The Phillies have done well here to get to 11-8. They shake off a slow start. I wrote it in a story that I guess it was Tuesday night's game that I covered down there. They're now three games, or I'm sorry, no, it would have been Wednesday night. They're now 3 games over, or Wednesday morning, whatever. They're 3 games over 500, a place that they were not at until June 17th last year. So it was the middle of June by the time that they got there. It took them 71 games to get to that point a season ago. So to do that here in April is really encouraging. And you look at what they have ahead of them, and the schedule's not easy. So again, it's like I said back on Monday, this is sort of like moving week for them. If you can find a way to sweep this series and all of a sudden you wake up and you're 14-8, even if you win 2 out of 3, you're sitting there 13-9, you feel pretty good about that overall. again, though, it's about tracking Atlanta, and like they can't make up any ground because the Braves just keep winning. Like they just swept the Astros. So you want to see the Phillies keep the foot on the gas here this weekend and maybe even close that gap with Atlanta a little bit more, and they have an opportunity to do it. And so while I'm not going to sit here and talk to you about how games on the 19th, 20th, and 21st of April are the end-all, be-all, it is a situation where the Phillies can really do some damage and start to separate themselves from that 500 mark.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, a couple things on that, Bob. You get an advantage. There's not many advantages that you get over the Braves, but this weekend the Braves are hosting Texas, so they're at least facing a decent team, defending world champs. So yeah, there is a chance to make up some ground, and banking wins in April, like you said, they're not these games aren't all that important because it's April, but they are important in the sense that when you can get a bunch of wins now, it allows you, not to say that you want to have that swoon later in the year, but it allows you some runway that if you do go through a four-game losing streak, it's not going to hurt you, right? So you get these wins while you can get them. The other thing is, and most people don't recognize this sometimes, but when you 11-8, when you parse that out over 162 games, it's a 94 win pace.
Yeah.
That's pretty darn good. And that's kind of right where we had them, you know, at the end of the year. Both you and I in our predictions preseason, I believe we were a game off, a game different, and I think we had them right around this pace. I think I had 94 and you had 93. So, you know, this is what they're going to be for much of the year, and that's okay. And if you get out to 14-8 and then you start, angling that out, now all of a sudden you're talking high 90s wins. Not to say that they would keep that pace, but that's the pace you're on.
Yeah.
And that's something that this group of players has not done in April, right, in the past. And so if you are 14-8 after this weekend, all of a sudden you got to say, well, geez, what's it going to be like when they actually start to get consistent offensively? Because they're not right now. Even though they've been better the last couple games, I think that it's a good sign for the Phillies to be where they are right now, especially if they come through this weekend unscathed.
Yeah, and I mean, it goes without saying that they've been the beneficiary of a weaker schedule, but we talked a little bit about that as well. This schedule has not been as easy or as brutal or filled with cupcakes as I think a lot of people thought at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
As we've talked about now, like the Nationals are playing better baseball all of a sudden. You look at what the Reds have done, decent team. I think that they're going to contend a little bit. The Pirates obviously had a tough time against the Mets this week, but have been off to a decent start. I believe that they're 11-8 as well. Not a terrible team. Like these aren't total pushovers until you get to the Rockies, until you get to the White Sox, and to see the Phillies take advantage of it has been encouraging. We'll see what happens again this weekend. But again, it comes back to the offense. And we saw some signs of life against a terrible pitching staff. And it's like one of these things, like you have to enjoy it for what it is. At least they did something later in the series, the final two games, as opposed to what they did on Monday night, which was next to nothing. So you look at it and say, okay, there's some progress here. There's some signs of life. Hopefully they can sort of use that momentum. They're no longer the National League's worst scoring offense. They leapfrogged the Cardinals, the Nationals, and the Marlins. So things are really pointing up right now. They're 22nd now in baseball and runs scored. You hope that they can use this weekend sort of as a springboard when they get back into a little bit of a tougher stretch here. Four games in Cincinnati, out to San Diego, who's played decent baseball here in April. And then I believe they're against the Angels to close out a 10-game trip. And again, the Angels are a functional team, and West Coast trips are difficult. So it's a tougher stretch coming up for the Phillies here. And we'll see if they can kind of gain some momentum and start to swing the bats a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you've kind of just nailed it there, because it what it comes down to, you know, looking at those games of this road trip that's coming ahead, and it's going to be it's a long road trip. And yes, you said there are three functional teams. Padres probably the best of the three, but you know, there's some pitfalls in there, right? I mean, you play in Cincinnati, you know, that ballpark doesn't hold anything. So all of a sudden you give up some gopher balls, and all of a sudden you're chasing a game against a Reds team. By the way, I found this for my story and I didn't realize this. They had the lowest expected batting average against their pitching staff of any team in baseball. I would not have guessed that. And then that was going into yesterday. So, you know, just I don't know if anybody passed them, but that surprised me. So there's a little bit of risk there. You know, four game series in Cincinnati. Well, maybe the bats aren't what they need to be. Maybe they catch a couple of your guys with some home runs, and all of a sudden you're splitting that series, and then we're not feeling great, right? After that, heading to San Diego. You know, the Padres, obviously they played the Dodgers well. When they played them, they've looked better lately. They got some, although I think, what's the name went on the injured list? Darvish went on the IL, but they've got some interesting arms there. And a very good lineup. And like you said, the Angels they've been mediocre. So yeah, I mean, you got to look at that road trip and say there's a potential to go 5-5 on that road trip. Not to say that they can't do better. They certainly can, but there is the potential for that 500 road trip. And if that's what you're looking at, you got to get this series, got to win this series, and say then you come out of a 5-5 road trip. Go, okay, would wish there was a little bit better, but okay, you're still in a good spot. You're still 6 games over .500 towards the end of April, or beginning of May, and we're in a good place. And I think that's why this weekend you've got to get these wins.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about the signs of life that we've seen from the offense, and I don't think it's surprising that it's coincided with this emergence from Trey Turner. You know, it wasn't so long ago that we were having conversations about, well, we know what happened last year. We know how things snowballed on him. It totally got out of control. And yes, he salvaged the season with a crazy run at the end, but is that what we're getting into again this season? The way things started. But then you look at what he's done on this homestand, and he's been outstanding. He's 12 for his last 29. He's hitting .414 on the homestand. His 6 extra base hits. In doing so, he's lifted his average from .277 to .329. His OPS from .665 to .872. And not that the sky, as I write in my newsletter today, was ever really falling for him. But I think it was not unreasonable to be like, are we doing this again with this guy? Are we really going to go down this road again where he's playing terrible defense? He's not a difference maker at the top of the lineup, but now you blink. And I know that guys like Garcia and Atlanta are having a good start. There's been a couple of really good shortstops around the game, but like, you can make an argument right now that he's a top 2, top 3 shortstop in the National League.
Yeah.
As he should be. So it's been encouraging to see him get it together, because goddamn, they need him to get it together.
they really do, and it's hard to knock the way he's played offensively. I mean, guy has been really good for, you know, a good stretch. I mean, I know there was a little bit of a slow start first handful of games, but he's been really good of late, and he's got those numbers up, like you mentioned, really high. And that's great, because you need that. You need him and Schwarber and Harper to kind of be the, you know, the guys that carry this offense. I mean, the rest of the lineup is, as long as they're just okay or just above, you know, a little bit better than average, then with those three guys being themselves, you have a potent team. So it's great. I just want to see the defense improve. Like, I'll take .280 Trey Turner. He doesn't have to hit .330 for me, Bob. I'll take the .280 Trey Turner and be happy if he plays better defense. Like, I'll trade a little bit of the offense for the defense. I mean, sure, we can have our cake and eat it too, and he hits .330 and plays really good defensively. But I would trade a little bit of that offense for better defense from him.
I think that there's still some concerns here. And you know, I said something the other day about, I was feeling pretty good about the Phillies, and then Sunday happened, and then I wasn't feeling so great when we talked. It's easy to feel good after a sweep. Doesn't matter the opponent. I do kind of want to pump the brakes on this a little bit, because there are still concerns up and down this lineup. Bryson Stott, who is a favorite of mine, and just in terms of I believe in him as a player. I think he's a guy that handles the moment well, but he's gotten off to a slow start. We haven't even really talked about him just because there's been so many other issues. Alec Bohm has sort of made the most of a kind of a lackluster start. He's tied with Bryce Harper, team lead in RBI. So he's been good situationally for them most of the time, but nothing that really jumps off the page at you. Johan Rojas, like, to his credit, you start the season 1-for-22. He's 8 for his last 23. He hit a couple balls hard the other night. He had a 99-mile-an-hour double, 102-mile-an-hour single. We were talking about him not even being able to get the ball out of the infield the first week of the season. So there's been some incremental progress there, but I don't think that problem is solved. I'm still not there to say like, well, Johan Rojas is now, don't have to talk about that issue anymore. And that all leads me out to right field, where it's starting to kind of get out of control now. You look at what Nick Castellanos has done, and I would point to what we just saw from Trey Turner. He's had one really good week, and it's sort of totally changed the entire feel of his season, right? Talk about his OPS basically being lifted 200 points in a 7-game stretch on this homestand. So I would use that as a frame of reference for Nick Castellanos. If he puts together 7 really good games, we could be talking about a guy who lifts his OPS from 350 to 650. It's doable. So I'm not saying that this thing has gotten totally away from him or it can't be recovered, but he has 69 at bats this season and doesn't have an extra base hit yet. He's the only qualified player in Major League Baseball right now that doesn't have a double, triple, or home run to his credit. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So, you know, we could talk about the holes in the swing, blowing away breaking stuff, the batting average, fine. But, I mean, I don't know. We're 20 games in now. Do the Phillies at least have to think about a situation where they get this guy a blow more than, well, they haven't given him one yet. Do they start to think about, well, yeah, all right, maybe we got to do something here?
Yeah, I mean, we asked Rob about this the other night, on Wednesday, before the game. And, you know, he says, oh, you know, Nick's, you know, been through these things before and, you know, he likes to plow through it. That's how, you know, and I want to give him leeway. But he said that he had, someone asked him, said he said he has thought about, you know, taking him out of the lineup, you know, give him a day, give him a blow. And I asked him, I followed up with that. And I said, you know, in the past, when you've done this with guys, you've done it around an off day. And, you know, is that something you like to do? That way they get 2 days off, you know, to kind of whatever. And he said, the answer he gave me was a little confusing. First, he said yes. So, which was in my head was, Castellanos doesn't have a good game tonight, meaning Wednesday, which he didn't. He was 0 for 4. He's going to be out of the lineup on Friday. That was my initial thing. But then as his answer went on, he said, I'm not going to be able to do that this time. And that made me think Castellanos is going to be in the lineup tonight, and that, but it might be one game this weekend where he comes out of the lineup.
Right.
I don't think he'll be out in Cincinnati, because I think that's a ballpark that he's had a lot of success in, and maybe, you know, you try and get it going there. But I do think that there's a real possibility that Nick misses a game, one of these 3 games against the White Sox. And I'm just not sure if it's tonight. We'll find out when the lineup comes out a little bit later today, or if it's tomorrow or Sunday. I think he's going to get pulled out of one of these games this weekend.
Yeah, it's just, you want to be fair. You know, there's a track record. He had 68 extra base hits a season ago.
Yeah.
I can't believe that the skills have just deteriorated to this degree. But it's a matter of how you manage this now.
Yeah.
You know, you can't keep trotting him out there where he gives you absolutely nothing, but you sort of need him to work his way through this. So it's a delicate balance. And certainly the contract is part of this, the amount of years that are left, the amount of money that is owed. But a thought that I've had is Bryce Harper at first base has been really good. You look at defensive run save, he's second in baseball. You look at the Statcast metrics. He's been outstanding so far.
Yeah.
You can't help but feel like, though, in the same breath, is Bryce Harper at first base for the 2024 Phillies the best thing? Because with what the Phillies have going on and with this outfield situation right now, it would be a hell of a lot easier, in my opinion, to patch up first base than it would be what they have with their current outfield mix.
And yeah, again, it's a great question, Bob.
April 19th, I know, but man, like,
it's a great question to ask if they missed on, they, you know, should they have kept
Reese? I'm not saying that's got to be Reese Hoskins, for the record.
Like, but I'm saying it's a fair question, because ultimately I think we're going to look back at this and say, did they get it right? You know, like, did they get it right to have Bryce Harper become the first baseman this season? You know, we don't know the answer right now, but I do think that it's worth looking at a little bit down the line and say, would they have been better off with Harper in the outfield and Hoskins at first base? And I do think that there was a thought to that. I think that the Phillies considered it before not re-signing Rhys Hoskins, before letting him, before making that announcement. I think that there was a thought that if maybe they could move the Castellanos contract, that maybe they would take that path and go Harper and left and Hoskins. I mean, Harper and right and Hoskins at first. Didn't turn out that way. You know, you lose Rhys, but you're right. I mean, it could end up being that. Look, it's 20 games. We're almost 20 games in. Tonight will be 20 games. That's not a lot of time to sit there and say, oh, Castellanos is done. It's too quick. But yeah, the concern is there that they got it wrong. The concern is there that they got it wrong, and he has to turn it around and prove that they didn't get it wrong.
Right.
We'll see what happens, but I don't think Bryce Harper is coming off of first base, but I do think that if Nick Castellanos can't figure it out and get right, that the thing that the Phillies are going to be in the market for leading into the deadline will be an outfielder, an everyday outfielder. And part of the problem is right now, Bob, and we didn't even mention this name, but part of the problem right now is Whit Merrifield has been even worse than Castellanos in more limited time. But the idea was that if they needed another outfielder, a guy who could play out there, that you had Merrifield.
Yeah.
And whenever he's had an opportunity to play, he's done nothing. So that's part of the issue as well. Like, you know, that hasn't worked out right as of this point. I'm not saying he's Josh Harrison 2.0. Like, that's not what I'm trying to suggest. He's going to have to play a little bit more before you make that determination. But I would venture to say that if Merrifield had gotten off to a better start, that we would have seen some different things in the outfield. We might have seen Rojas come out sooner. We might have seen Castellanos come out sooner. We might have seen different combinations in the outfit. Like, I really do think that Merrifield's lack of production has left the Phillies with not much of a choice.
And then how do you handle that? Because there's this idea that, well, he's not getting consistent at bats, and that lack of consistency is part of the reason that he hasn't performed. But at the same time, you don't owe it to him to just hand him start after start after start. You're not tied to him beyond the season. You're not paying him another $56 million. Right. So it's a matter of how do you balance that out while you have Castellanos doing what he's doing, while you have Johan Rojas, who's again showing signs of life, but still a big question mark, I think, at best. It is a very unsettled situation for this team right now. And as much as we both like Brandon Marsh, and everybody likes Brandon Marsh, Brandon Marsh is not going to finish the season with a 960 OPS. We've seen him kind of cool off a little bit here recently, had a multi-hit game the other night, but he's not going to be a top five offensive producer when it's all said and done either. So this is something to kind of keep an eye on. And we can talk about the date on the calendar. We can talk about being 20 games in, but I would always just say the NFL is not Major League Baseball and vice versa, but like, it's not an inconsequential amount of games either.
Right.
It's 20 games. Like, if we were in the middle of July right now, we'd say, man, like, dating back to the last week of June, this is what's going on and it's not good. Are you concerned? It's fair to take 3 weeks of baseball and start to kind of have a feeling about what you're watching. Not saying you have to draw definitive conclusions, but I think you're allowed to have a take
on a
3 week sample.
And there's no question. You're 1,000% right with that. But the one thing that I kind of say we don't go down that route is only because of experience with him, right? Yeah. He's had last year, July, the entire month was the worst month of his career. He was terrible. He was may have been worse than he is right now. Batting average wise, I mean, he did have some doubles and some home runs, but at the same time, like, his batting average was awful in the month of July, and then he comes back and has a good August and a decent September, and he's hot in the playoffs. So like, that's the one thing, is we've gone through this with him for an extended stretch in the past. So that's the one thing I kind of latch on to, Bob, and say, yes, these 3 weeks have not been good, and yet there are concerns with that. but I can't go completely. He's a disaster. He's a mess because we've seen it. We've seen this before. Frustrating as it is, we've seen this kind of, you know, cold snap from him. Whereas that immediately and for no apparent reason turns into a hot streak for him. So right. That's the one thing that I kind of cling to and say why we can't go completely, you know, off of Castellanos for the entire year at this point.
So what else did you learn this week? Because I covered a game where Ranger Suarez looked phenomenal. You covered a game where Christopher Sanchez looked phenomenal.
Yeah.
I think that the story here this week is, are both of these guys taking the next step?
Yeah.
Right. And does blowing through a bad Colorado, and I mean bad Colorado lineup, really prove anything to us? No. But I do like with Ranger Suarez, we'll start with him. What I like is that he pitches deep into a game. He seemed to be just as sharp late. I know the ninth inning got a little bit rocky, but he was really sharp in the seventh and eighth. He maintained some of that consistency deep into the game. To me, that's showing signs of the next step. It's not just a complete game shutout. It's the depth into the game. And now it's four times out and he's had varying results, but every game he's thrown, including his first, I think he went 5 innings, 3 earned runs. He pitched better than the result in that game against the Braves.
Yeah.
So I'm seeing consistency from Ranger Suarez in the early going, which I think is the thing that he has to answer. But we've also seen months from Ranger Suarez where he's been phenomenal and then it kind of tapers off. So I'm not there yet to say, oh, yes, they have the best number three in baseball. I know you wrote about this. I know Bryce Harper talked about it. I think the potential for that is there. I would like to see a little bit more, but the sure. early signs are very encouraging.
Yeah, and if you remember, Bob, I mean, one of my predictions this year was Ranger Suarez would throw 180 innings and be an all-star caliber pitcher, and he's started off that way. Now, like you said, I say the same thing about, you know, Castellanos, I'm going to say the same thing about Ranger Suarez on the opposite side. You can't get too far ahead of yourself with it. Like, he's been great, and that's fantastic, but I, too, need to see more than four starts. I too need to see this be, you know, hey, 10 out of 12 that are really good starts, you know, and then you start to sit there and go, okay,
yeah,
okay, now we got it. Now you're on to something. But the thing that I think we learned with him and then, of course, with Sanchez as well is even if they've taken a small step, even if it's not a giant step forward, but even if they take a small step, Phillies might have the best rotation in baseball. And that's the thing.
Especially when Taiwan Walker gets back.
I love your sarcasm. But the reality of it is that, you know, really, you look around the league and the Phillies, knock on wood, pitchers stay healthy, whereas most teams don't. And other than Seattle, maybe, who has a really good rotation as well, is there another rotation that's as consistent and, you know, effective as the Phillies? And I don't think that there is. I think you look at it and say it doesn't matter what game, you're going to get something different. Each of these guys throws differently. You know, Wheeler's the power pitcher. Nola is a precision guy. Suarez is just, he's a battler. I don't know how else to describe him because his stuff isn't like blow you off the page stuff. But it's really kind of, it's effective in how it works. And then Sanchez, of course, he's got the deadly changeup, right? So it's like they're all different kind of guys. So you can't go in and expect the same kind of starting pitcher each time out. I really like that mix, and I'm not sure that there's a better mix in baseball. And I think that that's something we've learned. And when you combine that, Bob, with, and it cracks me up because I read so many of our comments on our Facebook page and, you know, and on social media and everything else. The fans hate the bullpen, but we've talked about the bullpen. Like, we think the bullpen's really good. We're not out of our minds. I know that they had a blow up there. Soto had a blow up against Colorado, but I mean, you have one or two blow up innings over the course of 20 games, and the rest of them are really good. That's a really good bullpen. So if you got the best starting staff in baseball, and arguably one of the top two or three bullpens in baseball, you're in a great spot as this organization is.
You know how I feel about the Phillies bullpen, and I do think it's one of the five best bullpens in baseball. And I think it'll prove to be when you get down the stretch and you get into the postseason and all that. They have a lot of different ways they can come at you. But in fairness, we keep writing off these blow-up innings. Oh, they had a blow-up inning from Connor Brogdon. Oh, they had a blow-up inning from Soto. I mean, those innings matter. They care. And the other night, it almost burned them. So when you look at bullpen ERA right now, Philly's 5.49. They have the fifth worst bullpen ERA in baseball.
Yeah.
Now, I would say if you just look at FanGraphs and you go by WAR, they're top 10. They're actually eighth. So that lends itself to the fact that they strike out a lot of guys. They're hard to hit. Batting average against is pretty good. There's a lot that works in the favor. It's going to take some time for that ERA to sink to where it probably should be. But they have not, when you just look at some of the traditional numbers, been as good as I probably try to make it sound.
Yeah, but I mean, even look at the ERA, I think it's, again, it's early season because of that. I mean, 20 innings is not a lot to, or 20 games is not a lot to kind of dictate that off of. Keep in mind, Alvarado's ERA is really high, and that's all tied into the fact that he gave up all those runs on opening day, but has been really sensational since. But he's still got a really high ERA, all because of one outing, right?
The Mets, by the way, best bullpen ERA in baseball.
Yeah, I don't buy it.
Or no, I'm sorry. Highest WAR. 2.97 ERA. That's a seventh. It's pretty good. The Mets. The Mets are playing some good baseball here.
They are playing good baseball. And I thought that they would be better this year than last year. And I hated saying it when in our predictions, but
I was taking a victory lap at 0-5 or whatever it was. You know, the other thing that we saw with Christopher Sanchez this week, similar to Ranger Suarez, we're all like, well, you know, great game. Is he taking the next step? The one thing that I will say is that he is hittable and he gets himself into some situations. The sinker, especially, like it is very hittable. In fact, opponents are hitting 406 against his sinker so far this season. But everything else is really good. And we can talk about the changeup. He's throwing it harder this season. He's averaging almost 84 on the changeup. But teams just aren't doing anything with it, and they know it's his staple. Like, they know he's going to go to it, and they still can't do anything with it. They're hitting 139 and slugging 139 against his changeup this season. He's getting a lot of swing and miss. He's getting more swing and miss than he was a year ago overall. And his slider has been a lot better in the early going as well. It's actually become a little bit of a weapon for him. Teams aren't doing much with the slider. And so that's what's interesting to me. Like, can that slider continue to show improvement? And if it does, we already know that the changeup is legit, and those two pitches will help him escape some of the damage that teams do against the harder stuff with him, which is a little bit straight, a little bit flat, and a little bit hittable. So I don't think that you're going to see him in Cy Young conversation anytime soon, but like, can you get a guy that sort of profiles as a number three type of pitcher? You might have that with him. It's about length and getting deeper into games on a more consistent basis where I think I just don't know that he can make that type of jump, but I've been very impressed with him so far. And that changeup's legit. I mean, it's a real weapon. We saw it last year and it's again, proving to be this season.
Yeah. And it really is a difference making pitch. It's a game changing pitch for him. And it allows, so the one good thing, I mean, he does give up hits, but he doesn't give up big hits. Like, that's the interesting thing with him. Like, he really bears down really well when he's got guys on base. Yeah, he doesn't have he's not doing a good job holding runners on. He's balked a couple times. But aside from that, when he gets base runners on, he really has a way of bearing down and kind of limiting the damage and getting out of those innings. And when you have a pitcher who's able to do that, Bob, that's, to me, that's what you want out of a 3-4. Like, a guy who's like, look, he's not going to blow you away. He's not going to, he doesn't have ace like stuff. But what he needs to do is keep the score within reach, keep you in games, and let your team go out and win the game for you at the plate. And he's done that. And that's, you can't ask for anything more from a guy in that role. I look around the league, you know, I did the thing where I looked at Sanchez versus Suarez versus the other number threes in the league. I would venture to say if I did the same thing with Sanchez versus the other number fours, that we'd find a very similar thing, that he's top five in the game. at the start of the season. So that's a positive for the Phillies. I can't sit there and criticize too much. I think he's done a fine job.
Well, I know we got to wrap up here, so if you want to hit one last thing, we'll close it down.
I do want to hit one last thing, Bob, and I want to take you to a time that was before you were following baseball.
Okay.
Just for fun. I just wanted to see what your thoughts on this would be. You know, we lost a legend in the game. Whitey Herzog died this week. He was Cardinals manager for a long time. He also managed a couple other teams, but was known for his time with the Cardinals in the 80s. And Whitey was responsible for something, and boy, the writers really were creative with this, but a style of play called Whitey Ball. it really thought long and hard how to describe that one. But I just wanted to throw this stuff by you, Bob, because they had three seasons in the 90s the 80s where they went to the World Series. 1982, 1985, 1987. They won it in 82, lost to the Royals in seven games in 87, lost to the Twins in 85, and lost to the Twins in seven games in 87. All three seasons, they finished with less than 100 home runs as a team. All three seasons, they exceeded 200 stolen bases. In fact, one season, 85, they had 314 stolen bases as a team. Their OPS for each season, 82, was 697. Was their OPS as a team? They won the World Series. That was their OPS as a team. 714 in 85 and 718 in 87. Well, first of all, does it surprise you that their offense was that disparate from what it is in the game today? And secondly, could that style of play ever come back and be successful in major leagues as it's situated today with pitchers throwing 99 all the time?
The game would have to totally change. Like, as currently played, no. Sometimes there's deviation in style, and that creates an advantage. In this case, I don't believe it does. But those teams were interesting, right? Because that was Willie McGee and Vince Coleman,
yeah.
And obviously Ozzie Smith. I mean, like,
Tommy Herr.
They had some guys that could play defense. They had Luke some Kendrick. Guys that could run.
Yep.
You know,
yeah.
It
was wild. They were fun to watch because
the running Redbirds.
All they did was play defense, get singles, steal bases, hit and run, bunt. I mean, it was small ball.
I could be totally wrong here, but I kind of think that the Royals, like if you go back like 10 years ago, that was kind of what the Royals did. They were very, you know, let's win on the bases. Let's use our speed. They weren't power heavy. I mean, they had some hitters, but like they sort of used a variation of that actually.
Yeah. The only thing I could come up with, Bob, the only way, and I agree with you that with today's game, it would never happen. The only way I think it could ever come back is if we're seeing, and there's a lot of this discussion, a lot of people are talking about, you know, the pitcher injuries and how, you know, paramount they are in the sport today. And it's, you know, for varying reasons, whatever, we don't need to have that argument about why it's happening, but certainly it has a lot to do with, you know, spin rate and how hard you're throwing and recovery time in between, et cetera, et cetera. So it's all kind of tied in together. If there becomes a trend in the sport to pull back on that again and to say, all right, maybe we don't need to throw 98, 99 every time. Maybe we can get away with pitching a little bit more and, you know, topping out at 92, 93, but throw some other stuff and, you know, paint corners and things along those lines. If the game trended that way, then I could see a team playing this style again and having success with it, but only if the game changed back in that direction.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. All right, well, listen, we are out of time here, so we're going to wrap it up. For Anthony Sanfilippo, I'm Bob Wankel. Follow Anthony at AntSamPhilly on X. You can follow me at Bob_Wankel. Make sure that you're checking out both of us on Crossing Broad. Be sure to also subscribe to my newsletter at RedOctoberPhilly.com. We will talk to you on Monday.